It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to Undrafted, a Dynasty Game Theory podcast brought to you by the Undroppables. I am your host, Scott Belanger, a.k.a. Jax Falcone. You can find me on Twitter at Dino Game Theory. This is episode number 172. Let's roll. And it is Combine Week. What a crazy thing that we're fans of in this crazy world. That we are fans of this. I can't get enough of the combine. I'm refreshing my page. If I'm not watching it, I'm watching it with, like, it's crazy. Hours and hours. We watch the NFL draft and the NFL draft combine. How crazy is that, people? That's the sickos that we are. If you explained it to somebody, like, what it is, they'd be like, wait, no, but you watch that? And you'd be like, yeah, no, it's awesome. Why? I can't explain it. What I can't explain is why I have my guest on this week. Mr. Jordan McNamara joins me. Me and Jordan have had some pretty dope shows over the years. Of course, I've come out on top on every single one. but no, we have, man. He's an awesome dynasty mind. I love that he challenges me. I love that he's willing to take a different sort of perspective with things. And he's one of the guys I do listen to, pay attention to on Twitter, read and react to, because I think that it's so healthy to have an alternative point of view. Just like we say on this show all the time, be ready to be wrong. That's why I lean into people who don't always see things just the way I do, because they open up the doors to new thinking. We're going to open up those doors today. I love Jordan McNamara. You can find Jordan on Twitter at McNamara Dynasty, Analytics of Dynasty. Mr. Jordan McNamara, welcome back to the program, my friend.
It's good to be back. I'll let you know that a funny source of our prior debates was actually CeeDee Lamb, and I want to update you on the CeeDee Lamb story. Yes. 30-1 to lead the league in receptions hit this year, and I was on that. So I was, you know,
there you
that
go.
That's my guy now. CeeDee Lamb's my guy. And by the way, midseason I had him at wide receiver 2 over Chase. So that aged well at the end of the season. So
wow. See, so you owe me some money is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But that's the point, right? That's the point is, like, you're also ready to be wrong too. Like, and what's interesting, I say it over and over again. We go back and that's CeeDee Lamb Battle Scars. That's the one. That's the show. It's probably, what now, almost 2 years ago. I don't even know. I think it is 2 years. It's crazy how time flies. But that show was really great. We got heated. But the cool thing about it is, even though we were arguing, I would now argue we were both correct, if that makes sense. You know, I was right on the player take. You were right on the process take. You know, and it was funny because I kept saying, is this a – you know, you kept saying, is this a player take? I'm like, yeah. And you're like, I'm not arguing that. I'm arguing it's a process take. And
yeah. Yeah.
That's what's so beautiful about that conversation is that we basically were both right.
And it's so funny, like, and this whole, like, line is a really good example of, like, kind of the way I think about it was, like, there's so many, like, a lot of things had to go right for him, which was like,
totally.
And by the way, like, everyone being wrong on Mike McCarthy was one of those things, right? Because everyone said that Mike McCarthy was going to run the ball, and that if you had studied any dose of history, you would have come to the opposite conclusion on that. But yes, that was a leap of faith you had to take to kind of believe in him going into 2023. A lot of the slot stuff, like, can you truly, like, build, you know, a 160 plus targets out of that in an offense. Like, I'm not convinced a lot of offensive coordinators will do that. And he has been one that, in McCarthy, to his credit, did an excellent job with that. By the way, like, the other thing I think about this too is, like, kind of what I said, like, take a 30-1 shot, right? That's right. Kind of one of the reasons why I get concerned about, you know, taking wide receivers high, is because the payoff's not that big a lot of times. But, like, I love CD Lamb when it's 30-1 for him to be basically the number one wide receiver in receptions. I love that. Right. What I don't love is, like, paying wide receiver 3 or 4 prices for him in Dynasty. Like, that's a right. totally different, right? It's just a different type of game. So that's, right. that's kind of the, it's fun. Like, when you kind of look at that and put things in different scopes, like, how do you, and one of the things I think about Dynasty all the time is, like, how do you hit big for, like, how do you make a bet that's like a 30-1 type bet that can actually hit in Dynasty? And I think that's a big strategy and way that I've kind of taken on thinking about Dynasty.
Yeah, for sure, man. And, you know, it's, I think I remember asking, well, by the way, that was 2 years ago. Last year, we did talk about the Dallas Cowboys, and we did talk about them being way more pass centric than many thought. They were like, no, they're going to grind the ball with this McCarthy thing. And you and I were both on here, and I agreed with you because I had that the same take separately, but you came on the show and we talked about how it was like, no, everything they're doing and everything they're saying with their actions is that that's not the case. You know, they got rid of Ezekiel Elliott. They didn't add running backs. They got rid of running backs. You know what I mean? There was all this sort of stuff that was like, no, they're showing us they're going to pass more, not less. So, and sure enough, that's exactly what they did. And it was great. I have a lot of Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb. I have a few stacks in Dynasty, and yeah, I had a very, very good year in Dynasty, and a lot of it was probably due to leaning into that. You know, so kudos to you. Nice job on the 30-1. There you go.
Yeah, it paid off well. It was nice. It was a good hit. It
was a good hit. So here we are in before the combine, and you know, I know. So we've had a lot of talks about prospects and all this sort of stuff. And I thought that you were the perfect break from that because, you know, it's true, man. You know, I had my whole off season, you know, obviously doing this pod, you know, as a straight Dynasty pod, our listeners are thirsty for prospect talk. You know, they really are. And I don't blame them because you do want to figure it out. I do think it's something that you want to figure out. The question is, when do you have to have the answers to the test by? Like, when is your draft? You don't need to have the answers today if your draft is in 4 months. That's when you need to be right. You know, you need to be right when you're on the clock, not well before. It's, you know, we've been adopting the saying, it's not who's first, it's who's right. And, you know, curious what you think about that. Maybe just even tell us a little bit about your sort of process, because, you know, you're a bit more of a process guy than player take guy for sure. But you have to have some player takes in order to go ahead and push the button for players. So how do you sort of do this thing? I mean, do you just follow me and just do what I tell you to do, or what's going on here?
Yeah, well, I mean, my take on prospects is, like, you know, generally speaking, when you look within tiers of players and when you kind of look at player profiles, just generally take a step back, take the names away, start looking at, like, first round wide receivers, you start looking at top 10 quarterbacks, the Dynasty marketplace and the NFL draft, both of them, neither of those marketplaces have really been predictive in terms of fantasy success when you look at ADP and when you look at the order of which guys go in the draft. And I come back to that and think, well, okay, if a lot of that is random, and if we take wide receiver 1 as opposed to wide receiver 4 in a class, and do all that work, and that's the conclusion that the ADP comes to, which is what the market would tell you, that's the market number. That's the sum of all of that work. And that is not predictive. That tells me that there's an opportunity to zag. Right. And so I tend to zag against, you know, certainty and trying to figure out rookies now. And what my play typically is to just wait until, we get close to the draft. I want to study players. I want to kind of understand, you know, who they are kind of generally, see where they go in the draft, and then start using those player profiles, right? Using a lot of base rates, using a lot of those types of things, you know, and you can blend, you know, for example, receivers. I don't really try and, like, figure out the specific, like, route techniques of each receiver. I want to know basically when they broke out, I want to know what round they went in the draft. And I want to know if there's any like red flags, right? In terms of, and I think a lot of the tape stuff can tell you some of that stuff about like how they kind of play. But that's just stuff I kind of catch up on right at the end. And right now I'm sort of zigging and studying a lot of like veterans and that sort of stuff, you know, at this time of the offseason.
Yeah. I mean, you know, free agency does happen before the draft, the NFL draft. So for those reasons, it's smart to have some, you know, some sort of free agency based takes, you know, in other words, what's going to happen. You know, we kind of know who's a free agent and what's going to happen. You know, I mean, it's very likely with the cap going up that T. Higgins is staying in Cincinnati. More likely than not, I would at least say, right? Mm-hmm. They're very likely to at least tag him, I would think. Do you kind of agree with that first?
I do.
Yeah. So given that, then you should probably have a, you know, a result based, you know, take on, okay, well, what's going to happen to the market after that happens? And is there any implication for me? In other words, is there, should I be selling now or buying now? Right. Or should I be thinking about his value will go up when he signs or will it go down? And those are the simple thought processes you want to put yourself through. What's most likely to happen? And then what's the most likely ramifications of that happening? And what's the best course of action I can take to spearhead that action?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and then kind of understanding as well, like, you know, different player moves and like the impact that has down the board, right? Like, you know, what's the impact? Right. And again, I come back to, and I keep thinking about like the Kyren Williams, like I kind of have this theory on a guy like Cam Akers, where we went into last year thinking like, well, it's got to be Cam Akers, right?
Right.
And all the ADP would have suggested like uncertainty, like a lot of the player prop stuff would have, you know, uncertainty, like a lot of the projection stuff, you would have been like, I don't know how to feel great about that. And then you kind of look and you're like, okay, well, kind of thinking like, okay, past that, where, you know, what's the play you kind of make against that, right? Like, what's the other bet that you want to make? It ends up being Kyren Williams. And I'm not like, I keep thinking about that for guys like Zamir White, for other players that could be impacted by free agency. Like, okay, if these guys kind of step in, like they're not necessarily the greatest profiles. Like, I don't really believe in Zamir White is to be like this big bell cow. So if that's true and Jacobs leaves, kind of then what's the next play? Like, I'm thinking a lot about those kinds of things at this time of the year.
Right. Yeah. It's almost like right now, Zamir White is like, you're just like, if you're holding Zamir White, you're kind of hoping that Jacobs leaves and then not keeping Zamir White, but selling at that exact moment because his projected upside at that moment and his value will be based off the projected upside, which of course you and I would both argue is not the center of the range of outcomes. It's the ceiling of the range of outcomes. So you are selling closer to ceiling than you are to floor because the floor could be Cam Akers or worse. I mean, it could just be Zamir White. You know what I mean? It could just be, he continues to be Zamir White. I would argue, yes, he could be Kyren Williams. That's, I suppose, but that's like a 1% or 2% outcome. Like, that's not likely. You know, even if you were to say he's going to be, I don't know. I mean, what's further down? Like, you know, Dameon Pierce 2 years ago, but even Dameon Pierce isn't Dameon Pierce anymore. So even selling on that type of value is probably wise, right? So yeah, I'm with you 1,000%. That's fun stuff to think about. I do want to do a couple cool things. I just sent out some like, you know, a tweet with like questions. So I've got a couple questions I want to hit from some of the listeners and some of the people that were kind enough to submit some stuff. So, but we'll do that right after this. Back to the program. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, I wanted to get to this one, Jordan. This one's fun. And it kind of will tie into some of our thoughts about the class too. So my man, Gemmo, asked me about the Chicago Bears. And I love dunking on the Chicago Bears fans because they're the best fans, but they're just so like, I don't know, man. They're so delusional sometimes. Like, I guess all fans are pretty delusional. Although I think some fan bases are a little bit more realistic or even like they're certain they're going to lose. You know what I mean? They're like, no, this is not going to work out. Where Bears fans are somehow delusionally hopeful. I don't know where this comes from. I find it very, very, you know, fascinating. But I also find fascinating the spot that the Chicago Bears find themselves in and the question that has been asked about the Chicago Bears and how it pertains to both Justin Fields and Caleb Williams. Not necessarily their dynasty value, although to some degree, yes. But also to the question of if you and I were running the Chicago Bears, like, what would you do? And I find that the question that gets asked is binary, and I don't find the answer to be binary at all. What are your thoughts?
So, yeah, I mean, this is like, I think this is a great discussion. By the way, I got shouted down, not by you, by other people. I got shouted down for discussing the Bears trading Justin Fields last year.
Yeah.
And there were some amazing takes. Like, there was majority responses on like Justin Fields or 102, where it was right. Like Justin Fields. Well, Justin Fields or 104, like Justin Fields. Like,
yeah,
that has changed dramatically. And so this is something I've thought about a lot. Like, I don't think from an NFL perspective, the worst thing that you can do is pay a non-elite quarterback.
Correct. That's
right?
Correct.
It's horrendous thing to do, right?
Yes.
It's what Daniel Jones, right? Yep. It's the Daniel Jones deal.
David and Derek Carr, the whole Carr family.
Yep. The Cars. Yep. And, you know, it's a little bit different. Like when you get a guy like Geno Smith, who is making like there's an actual middle class in terms of what quarterbacks are making. Like Jared Goff's actually in that tier right now.
Yes.
As well. And so you kind of look at that and you're like, okay, well that's tolerable, but I don't think the extension on that Justin Fields is going to want is going to be in the Geno Smith, Jared Goff, present APY conversation. So,
yeah. And by the way, Jordan, also, like, if you think about the Jared Goff situation, it's kind of like, oh, we have this like kind of ready-made team that could win. We find there's value in paying a middle-class quarterback if he's just good enough. Like, you know, if we get Kirk Cousins, like if that team had Kirk Cousins, they win the Super Bowl potentially. You know what I mean? Like there's a just good enough that's actually palatable for that team. Whereas just good enough for certain teams, i.e. the Giants, not going to work. So yeah, I love your point. Continue. I didn't mean to interrupt. Actually, I did mean to interrupt. My apologies.
No, that's fine. And I think it does matter by conference too, right? Yeah. If you're going to, if you want to win in the AFC, like for the next 5 years, like God willing, everyone's healthy.
Yeah.
But I mean, Allen, Mahomes, Lamar, I mean, Burrow. Herbert. Like you got a hard. I mean, there's even more. Like I'm not even.
Stroud.
It's not even inclusive. Stroud, right? I mean,
right.
You know, it's murderer's row. Like, who's the third best quarterback in the NFC? Right? Like, you know, like you could start debating that topic, right? At guys like, you know, Purdy, Dak Prescott, Hurts, you know, Goff, right? Like Cousins. Like that's a vastly different conversation than the third best quarterback being in the AFC being a 2-time MVP. Right. Like the conversation there is drastically different. So I think when you kind of look at that, like your decision can be a little bit different.
Yeah.
I keep coming back to like, so I would think like for a team like Detroit, like I could be okay paying Goff, like extending Goff if it's not going to be like top of the market type stuff, because I think the conference is different, but I don't think Fields is going to fit that. I think Fields is going to demand something that's, you know, starts with a 4 per year. And like, given what we've seen, like if you don't know after 3 years, like the answer is probably no.
Yeah.
And I the stats haven't gotten really better in the stuff that I, you know, that the sack avoidance stuff, which is so big. I mean, that's the Mahomes and Allen superpower. People like think about all the trick throws and all that stuff, but avoiding sacks, like people get all concerned that Allen throws too many interceptions. And I was like, he does. He throws a lot of interceptions, but he doesn't get sacked.
Yeah.
So he's actually avoiding negative plays in a way that we don't really think about those. And a lot of times sacks can be worse for you than an interception. So
yes, Jordan, I was just about to say that sacks are almost worse than an interception. They're basically a turnover. The amount of times you score on a drive with a sack is like so much lower than a drive without a sack. I mean, it's like, it's really incredible. You know, so same thing with actually holding too. So, you know, both of those things kind of come to the same conclusion that sacks are a crippling stat. If you're taking sacks, you're likely not scoring and winning. And sure enough, Justin Fields, as prolific as he is on the ground and actually, dude, he delivers the ball pretty well when he's able to. And when he's he just is a bit of a slow processor. That was part of the scouting on him originally, which, hey, look, I didn't know that. I mean, what the hell do I know, right? I mean, here we are, right? But that was the scouting, and it's borne out. And the interesting thing is that the sack pressure to sack rate carried over from college to the NFL, and that's actually the biggest, way to put it on him rather than, you know, on the offensive line or scheme or whatever.
Yeah. And that's actually, it's funny because that's the stat, like, of all the quarterback stats, I've tried to create some like derivatives of that stat to try and get like some more discrete stuff. I call it lost dropbacks, which is, and then I have like a lost dropback on pressure dropbacks. And the lost dropback is basically when you scramble or get sacked. Right. And you look at like on his dropbacks, Fields is either scrambled or sacked on those more than anyone else in like NFL history, like of recent NFL history. I'll call it like the PFF era, say like the last like 20 years, like when we have that actual data.
Right.
And so like by far, like his, like the last 2 years have been like top 5 years. Last year was the most that anyone's ever done in a year. And like this year was like a top five number as well. So, so that all that stuff gives me concern, and that's like the sticky stuff at being quarterback. And so, and again, that's stuff that carries over from college. It did carry over from college. Like those are things that concern me. So I would be looking to kind of, all right, well, what can I get for him? And then let's reset the clock. I think the option of like, I don't know. Again, to the extent that we can figure out quarterbacks, I'm not sure that we can. And so my sort of thought would be if one and two are pretty close, like I'm not sure there's a big time difference there between one and two, right? If I would kind of go into my offensive coordinators and my offensive scheme people and say, you know, who fits kind of the system that we're in? And I don't think Caleb Williams is for everybody. Right. Like Caleb Williams is like minus 1600 to go number one overall. That's crazy talk to me. I mean, this is the quarterback with the longest time to throw of anyone in basically the last like 15 years in the first round by far. And by the way, the second longest time to throw is Justin Fields in college. And Caleb Williams like makes Justin Fields look like a quick thrower. Like that's how like it's like more than a tenth of a second more than that. It's a huge difference. Yes. Yeah. And so, I mean, he's a second percentile guy in terms of like getting rid of the football. Like he hangs on to it forever. And so I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that a team would look at his profile at 6'1", light, you know, we haven't seen hand size or any of that stuff, and come to the conclusion that they want to go a different route. So I don't think I have Drake May futures. I've got Jaden Daniels futures to go number one at like 10 and 25 to one. So I say all that to say I would be in the business of kind of exploring, hey, is there a trade to go? Does two want to come to one? And we can trade Justin Fields and move down to two and take the next guy, take any surplus picks and do all that stuff.
So I did a mock draft where, you know, the PFF has it where you can, you know, just be a team and mock draft for them. And PFN, Pro Football Network or whatever, has one. I love the tool. It's fun. I love doing it, man. It helps me sort of get familiarized with the class too, just because, and I mean, like, I'm a draft Nick all the way through all positions. So I do this with various teams just to see what they're sort of facing when they're on the clock. Like, you know, what's going to happen for Tampa Bay when they're on the clock? Oh shit. What are their team needs? I start thinking about it. Then I start thinking, well, who's might be available? Would they want to trade this pick? Would I want to trade this pick? And it's just fun for me. I go down these rabbit holes. Well, I did that for Chicago and I was like, okay, I'm at the 101 and who comes a calling but the Commanders, right? And the Commanders, basically you're going to get 1.02. You're going to swap one and two and they're going to give you a future first. Their 25 first comes with it. Plus whatever, right? But even if it's just, if you just said it's the 25 first of Washington and the 1.02 for your 1.01 in the NFL draft, it's probably more than that, but that's amazing because you're still getting a top two quarterback. I mean, if Caleb was that much better as a prospect, that's a different conversation. You know, I don't know if he is or isn't. You know, it's hard. Like you say, for the quarterbacks, this is super hard. You know, they're basically a coin flip to begin with. I don't know that Caleb's going to be great. I do see greatness when I watch him. Like, I see greatness. Like, he has this sort of, you know, when people compare him to Mahomes, it's because he's able to extend the play, as you point out, 3.26 time to throw. He extends the play. He'll run. He kind of looks cool doing it. And he throws a little sidearm, darts down the field. And you're like, fuck, that's really good. And it is really good. Does that win in the NFL? Well, yes. If you have that skill, it wins. The other one you need is 1-2-3 throw on time. You know what I mean? 1-2-3 hit a guy in the hands, you know, a tight end in the hands who's kind of covered. You know, it's like you just have to do other things too, you know. And I'm not saying he will or won't or can or can't do those other things, but can Jaden Daniels do those other things? Can Drake May do those other things? And then if you move to the 102, don't you have to start thinking, can J.J. McCarthy do those things? And can I move down another time? Can I move to the 3 or the 4 or the 5 or the 6 or the 7? Or can I move to the 3, then the 5? Can I move to the 4, then the 8? I mean, can I make these moves and like literally bank multiple 25 first-round picks and still end up with J.J. McCarthy? Like, is that possible? Holy shit, if that's possible, 1,000 times I am moving down a couple times, taking J.J. McCarthy and hoping that J.J. McCarthy is as good or better than those other three quarterbacks, which is not not a non-zero.
Right.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Like, it would matter to me, like, the evaluation process on these guys. Like, I would need to know, you know, kind of where my board is. But like, if I,
yes,
like I come back to this and I come at this with a healthy dose of, we don't know what the hell we're doing.
Yeah.
And it's, and in fairness to us and in fairness to everyone, if this was capable of being figured out, someone would have done it already.
Yeah.
Right. Like, if there was a model, if there was a metric, like, again, I think there's actually metrics that we'll never have access to that probably tell us a lot of this answer. Like, I think, you know, not to get geeky, but I think, like, if you had like health tracking and like sleep tracking and like those sorts of things, like, I bet that that gives you an indication of why guys like Burrow succeed, where guys that are more physically talented don't. Like, I think that there's probably answers that we'll just never know. But I come at it with like, okay, if the board's pretty close, like, just let other people pay to make the hard decisions. Like, I don't, and I, that's not, like, I think there's a lot of ego and, hey, we have to pick our guy. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I understand that perception. And listen, they're the professionals and I'm not. But like, yeah, my play would be, hey, I'm going to sit at 2 or 3 and I'm going to just take the, you know, if in a rookie draft, right, I'm going to sit at 2 or 3 and just take the third guy. Right. I mean, that's historically been the right thing. I mean, don't pay to make the hard decisions. And I think, I think too often teams want to do that. Again, if you want to go, if your decision is, hey, we don't think McCarthy's the guy, right? We don't think McCarthy can be a guy. And you say, hey, I want to stick at 3 and take that guy. Like, that's fine. Like, do that. Yeah. But like, I wouldn't be,
sure.
I don't think that the answer is, I certainly don't think that the answer for Chicago is to keep Fields and trade down. No. And I just want to give you an example of why.
No, but I'll say this though. The answer might be to keep Fields and trade down. Not keep him, like pay him, but like, this is his final season on that deal if you don't pick up the fifth year option, which most people think that the fifth year option is not going to get picked up on him almost by anybody, by the way. But, you know, so even if they traded him, you know, that's why his value isn't a first round pick. Cause if someone was going to pick up the fifth year option or pay him a lot, he's worth a first round pick. So obviously someone would pay a first round. Pittsburgh would pay a first round pick if they were going to sign him to a multi contract, of course. But the whole point of the matter is that it's, that deal's not getting done. If it does get done, I'll be surprised, but it's not getting done because they're not going to pay him because of what you already talked about, that he's not worth it and he doesn't give you a decided advantage to win. But I would say this, if for whatever reason you did this thing where you traded down 2 or 3 times, banked like 2 or 3 or more future first round picks, especially in 2025, and you keep Justin Fields and roll it for one more year without a quarterback. You can also draft like Spencer Rattler, Michael Pratt, Penix, or Nix later, potentially. Obviously, with these trade downs you do, you know, you now have a slew of ammo. You know, you have all these picks that you can make. You can get a you know, you could try with one of those guys. Who knows if one of those guys maybe, you know, I don't think they are, by the way. But you can add it to the quarterback room and then – still there's going to be guys, Russell Wilson and Kirk Cousins, and next year's draft when you have picks. And my gosh, there's just always going to be an opportunity for you to be able to add a quarterback. I'm not saying that they should not take Caleb Williams. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that they should be sort of game playing and game theoring their way through. What if we don't? You know, what if we don't keep Justin Fields, and what if we don't take Caleb Williams? What are those other options? You know, and I think that's the healthy way to look at it. I mean, what if Kirk Cousins went there and they like draft Malik Nabers and, you know, get a bunch of future first round picks by moving down? And holy smokes, this could be like, you know what I'm saying? Like, because even right. their ninth pick, that could be the J.J. McCarthy spot. So they could trade, you know, from like 1 to 5, pick up a future first, take Nabers or something like that. Trade from 5 out of there, pick up another future first round pick. You know what I'm saying? Like, they can right. really kind of like get a winning team going forward. I mean, DJ Moore, Malik Nabers, and like a Kirk Cousins. I mean, not bad, dude. And future first round capital to improve your team next year, like, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there's just other ways that they can go. I think what's going to be hardest for them is that it's FOMO, right? You just can't pass yep. on Caleb Williams in this sort of media network that, you know, exists around them.
Yeah, that's the thing. And like, to get ownership's buy into that, like, again, teams don't do that, so it's inherently risky. You know, that's the you know, just from a job preservation perspective. So, but yeah, by the way, just to go back and look at like the haul that was taken, again, it's not, this team didn't make all these picks, but when San Francisco actually traded up for Trey Lance, they traded 3 firsts.
Yeah.
And this is the reason why I don't like the, oh, keep Justin Fields and then trade down and just collect picks and try to build it out that way. The picks, Brian Breeze, interior defensive lineman who played, by the way, 539 snaps this year and had the second lowest PFF grade of any interior rookie. Cole Strange, the offensive guard, and then Micah Parsons was actually the other pick in that. But so you got lucky by drafting a Hall of Famer there. I think that and you look at like the RG3 trade as well, like when they traded down, like the return on that, those picks, everyone thinks, oh, you can build an elite team with that. Harder said than done.
Yeah.
You know, or easier said than done. Harder than said, you know. And I look at that and I'm just like, that wouldn't be, oh, we can put an elite team around Justin Fields. I think that's the conclusion that I come to in a trade down.
Right? Yeah, no, I agree with that. I'm just saying, like, if you somehow, like, tried to get fancy with the trade downs and missed the quarterback spot, you know, like, you were like, we're going to get this J.J. McCarthy thing done, and somehow you fuck it up. The point is you still do possess Justin Fields with a now better roster. That is still a fact, you know?
Right.
And if he was going to take a step forward, you could sort of see it this year. He could play himself into a contract. Who knows? Hey, if we win, great. If we lose, guess what? Our pick is better. We have another shot at getting a quarterback. Like, you know, and we have multiple firsts so we can maneuver to get that quarterback. That, you know, everybody says, well, there's not one in 2025. Okay, there isn't until there is, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Joe Burrow wasn't there until he was. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that there's going to be a Joe Burrow. I'm just saying you don't know that there is or there isn't yet. You know, we just don't know. And then again, if there isn't, okay, well, there'll be another quarterback market. There's always something. I'm not saying, and then there's others that will say, just keep them both and whatever. We're beating this dead horse and let's move on. But I think it's extremely interesting. And unfortunately, there's no conversation about multiple options. It's basically just turn on the TV, keep Justin Fields or not. You know, it's like, of course not. That's the dumbest one. The keep Justin Fields is clearly the wrong answer because of, like you said, the cost of it and just the fact that he's not proven to be a winning quarterback. So why would you bet on someone that's already proven that they can't do it when you have to pay them more for the one that might be able to actually do it? It doesn't make any sense.
If you're scared to give the fifth-year option to someone, that tells you the answer.
That's the answer. Right? What are we doing?
Right.
I got a couple other questions that were sent in that were a lot of fun. It was it's just sort of dynasty strategy and some of the guys, I really appreciate the question. So thanks guys. You know, but one was about like sell lows, you know, and I think this is interesting because, you know, there was another one said, hey, define a roster clogger versus a depth piece. And the other one was like, hey, help me with sell low. Where's the line that you decide to keep a player? What are the best ways to sell low? And so I thought, you know, I'll leave it at that. What are your thoughts basically when you hear those questions?
So let me start with roster clogger, because I have an actual definition of this. So my definition of a roster clogger, you got to meet two, if there's two prongs to it. Number one, in the next season, you don't envision a scenario where you're going to feel comfortable putting them in a lineup. In the next year, you don't envision a scenario where you think that there's that player gives you a meaningful upgrade in a trade in like the top 50 picks and the top 50 of ADP. So you don't think you could put that player in a trade for a top like 50 guy, right? In a package to upgrade in that range. And I'm not saying that he's got to be the lead piece, but if you're talking about like a 2 or 3 to 1 or 2 or 3 to 2, something like that trade, where you don't envision that he could be an asset in that deal. If the answer to those questions is that you don't believe that either, you know, is the answer to those questions no, right? You don't think he's a guy you feel comfortable putting in a lineup and you don't think he's a guy that you think you're going to be able to put in a deal that makes a difference for your team, then he's a roster clogger and you should cut him.
Yeah, that's well said. It's funny because I have like, this is different depending on what type of league it is. You know, you and I have talked about this many a times before. Like if it's a 14, I'm in a 14 team, start 14, you know, there's almost like no such thing as a roster clogger. I mean, of course there is, but like everybody's a depth piece because there are teams who literally are starting guys that may not see a touch, like literally, like you're like, use check might get in there. It's like not a bad upside play. Cause if he does see a touch, it could be for a touchdown. Like use check, especially when, you know, you're a middling team, you know, some of the best teams are like, wow, they're really deep. And then I'm in leagues where it's like 10 teams start 9 or something, you know, those are vastly different calculations. You know, one of them, I have a team where like Calvin Ridley feels like dead weight to me, you know, I'm like, this guy's like, you know, and then in that league, Calvin Ridley is like starts for any team. Every single team would start him in the 14-14. Right. So that's the first thing to identify is sort of league wide. And I know our buddy Scott Connor talks about this all the time is you sort of count the wide receiver spots and the flex spots and however many that is. So if it's start 2 wide receiver with 3 flex, that's 5. If it's a 10 team league, well, that's 50 wide receivers, right? You know, you got to be kind of thinking in those terms. You know, in this other league that I'm talking about, I think it's start 3 wide receivers and there's 6 flex spots on 14 teams. Well, wide receiver now, gosh, I mean, you're trading the 100th wide receiver for the 120th with plans. You know what I mean? These are like, it's really different. So each league is different. I think that's the first thing I would say. But I totally agree with what you're saying. It's like, what is the, and I've had this conversation, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. There's a difference between production and value. And so some players will give you production, but not value. Like I have a couple of teams, a lot of teams actually, I don't know how many shares, but of Jacoby Myers. And Jacoby Myers gives me production. Like when I need to put Jacoby Myers in my lineup, I look and I'm like, he's going to get fucking 5-10 targets. Like, this is great. He's going to help my team. Now he's helping a team that is again a deeper one because if you're starting Jacoby Myers on a 10 team start 8 or 9, you're probably losing anyway. So he doesn't give you any value. See what I'm saying? So the production is moot anyway. So that's key to understand. Where does he fall in those ranks? Whereas Jacoby Myers in almost any league, even that 14 team one, seems like nobody ever wants his ass. So he doesn't give me any value. And I look at value as what I can trade him for, liquid value. What does this player bring on the trade market? So it's almost like I'm never looking to trade Jacoby Myers because nobody's ever looking to buy him, even in those leagues where they should really be trying to take advantage of the guy with Jacoby Myers because they're like, dude, his value is much lower than his production. So I could buy some cheap production here and get his ass on my team because my team is fairly shallow and I'm starting shitbags in my third flex. So it sometimes doesn't line up with the rest of the league and the way they see the war, you know, wins above replacement and value above replacement player. Like they don't see it as well as you do. And for those, or maybe you don't see it as the player that you are, right? So it's important to try and see those things and kind of, I guess you're kind of hoping that someone else will see it. If the league doesn't see that value, then you might as well just bank the production and move on. It's what I've done with Jacoby in a number of leagues where I know nobody really wants his ass, but I'm happy to have him because he helps me win on the margins in weeks where I've got buys, injuries, etc., or even sometimes he's the best matchup.
Yeah, it's especially true like when you get outside the top like 75 picks in startup drafts or so, right? Like the odds those guys are a big uptick in cost when you get out, you know, into those rounds, it's not super likely. And so you start kind of, it's a value decision for me. It's a, you know, a values decision for me in terms of like, well, what do I believe? Right. Which is that production's more predictable than value, right? Like I can predict that better, right? Like, I mean, Dak Prescott, you know, does what he does and was basically the quarterback of one for an extensive period of time. And he goes down in price. What the hell are we doing? Right. Like you can't, like, if that is what the market is going to do, what value is it in predicting that? Because for you to have, for you to benefit from predicting that, you would have had to say, okay, in the midst of this heater, I need to sell him now because he's going to fall in value, right? Josh Jacobs,
it doesn't make any sense.
In the midst of four top, like, you know, 20 finishes, you know, his value is plummeting, right? He's at running back 20. And then he goes on and basically, you know, and finishes a top three guy in 2 years ago. Right. I mean, you can't, it's really, really hard, I think, in Dynasty to play keep up with the Joneses because a lot of the things that the Dynasty market does to players makes no sense. Right. And so, and when you kind of understand, like, one of the things that I found when doing my research on AOD stuff and the team building guide in particular was if you look at a receiver and one that is hit, and I just use a hit just so it just has a definition of being a top 24 seasonal finish in total points, right? That's just the definition I use so that way I can talk about it. If you just look at guys that have done that versus guys that haven't, right? The guy that has done it is substantially more likely to do it again than the guy who has not done it at the same price, right? So when you get a rookie or when you get a guy who has not produced, you know, let's say, you know, wide receiver three of this class is 15th at ADP and 16th at ADP is a guy that's hit once before, right? The odds would tell you that the guy that is 16th, but is hit before is much, much, much more likely to produce a future starter season than the guy that has not done so.
Right.
And that is all that is the value, right? The age and all this sort of non-scoring premium that we put on young players in Dynasty, right? That's all that is, right? That's the actual measure of it. And when you actually look at it, it's about like in kind of that range, like a third round wide receiver who has not hit in his career is about as likely to hit as a wide receiver drafted in the seventh round of ADP. So that's a huge difference, right? When you kind of look at and kind of think about those things. So, you know, that's one place where I kind of look at a lot of these production things and a lot of these value things and say, you know, we can move off of this, you know, this in a player you talked about earlier, like T. Higgins.
Yeah.
I mean, if his name was Joe Smith and he played for any other team, he would be wide receiver 35.
Yeah.
But because of where he is and who he is, he's valued substantially higher. But when you blind test his resume, it's not good. Right? His numbers, his underlying metrics are not good. He's a basically contested catch. You know, he's in the, you know, people are going to hate this comp, but he's in the Gabe Davis sort of George Pickens sort George of Pickens. Lineage of the wing of the receiver, if you will. And those guys just aren't huge difference makers. So you see a lot of these things and they happen. And I don't put a ton of value in terms of trying to chase roster value. A guy like James Conner is a great example. Like James Conner for the rest of his, you know, for basically the last 4 years has overproduced his cost. Right? I mean, he's just going to, cause no one's going to have any value in that profile. And I don't try and keep up with that. I just bank towards the production. And by the way, can I mention something on WAR too?
Yeah, yeah.
I think the mistake that people make about WAR or WARP, I have a WARP metric. I think the mistake that people make is use it as a season long metric, because while Dynasty is a long term game, the actual WARP stuff is a week to week calculation. And I'll give you an example. Okay. When a running back gets hurt, right, the running back that goes in for him is substantially likely to have an uptick in valuation and or an uptick in touches, right? So, for example, when Alvin Kamara a few years ago goes down, he goes down for 2 weeks. I think it was week six and week seven. Latavius Murray came in and was the running back one by 10 total points over the next 2 weeks. Okay, hence my shirt, right? That's actually my logo of my AOD is that Latavius Murray season, right? Where you just were able to capture the peak. Now, if you measure him over the entire season, he looks totally abnormal. But he was never going to be in your lineup or rarely going to be in your lineup unless you're playing in some sadomasochistic league like you play.
Yes.
With those 14 and 14. He's right. Not going to be in your lineup usually, but he is going to be in your lineup when Alvin Kamara's out. So what you're able to do is capture the peaks of players at running back that you're not able to do at wide receiver, right? Wide receiver, you actually – it's much harder to sort of capture those peaks if you're trying to play week to week like that. So I do think, like, the warp conversation is interesting, but you have to understand it's not a season-long application. It's a – you should kind of measure that on a week to week and kind of adjust for how likely the person is to be in a starting lineup.
Yeah, and I mean – right. And if you can trade, I think the question of whether it's a depth piece or not, and the long answer, and how to sell low, just to kind of get back to some of those questions, is like, you know, selling low is a little bit of a different idea. I would imagine that the question about selling low is like, when the bottom starts to fall out, is that kind of what you think he's getting at? You know, because he says, where's the line that you decide to keep a player? I don't know if that, I don't know what that means. Like, I'm a little bit confused by that, but I think selling low for me is like, you know, if there's any chance of a bounce back, great. But like generally, like running backs, you know, like Dalvin Cook, even we sort of thought it was funny because I was in startups last year where I was like, I was kind of pissed that I let him fall too far and then didn't get him, and then I was like, oh my God, thank God, like. You know what I mean? So it's like even when you think you're wrong, sometimes you're right. Like I literally had to resist taking Dalvin in startup last year before the season. Because like, dude, he's going to land someplace and be – and no, he did not land anywhere and did nothing. You know, and so, you know, even at that point – so if you were selling quote-unquote low on Dalvin, you were actually selling high. You know, so it's really hard to know. And that's where you just have to have some conviction, but also recognizing – that any sell window is a sell window. And even when you sell low and then the player still has a quote unquote bounce back or something, don't sweat it. Just get off and move on. I think that's kind of the advice I'm trying to give here is that like when you see the window, sometimes that's your only window. You know, there's not, you know, if you said to any league, you know, even if they're all paying attention, which is one fucking problem, is that sometimes only three people are going to see a post you put or whatever. Even when you send a trade, sometimes trades go 10 days without being looked at. We know we all play in leagues, right? So, but even if everybody's paying attention and you said, I'm selling Gabe Davis, I'm selling Brian Robinson, people would be like, eh. Like, not everybody's going to even want to even entertain a trade for him, let alone how much. So like once you have someone who's interested in making that trade that you think you're selling out and selling low on Brian Robinson, and you're like, man, I'm only getting the, you know, a 25 second for Brian Robinson. Isn't that selling low? What should I do? Shouldn't I just keep him? It's like, not unless you're selling him. That's the amount that you're able to get. I mean, right. You know, so you have to be like, is this best for my roster to sell off? And be like, maybe you send another one. Couple people that you think need a running back. Hey, last call. I'm going to sell them, and it's probably going to piss you off for what I'm selling them for. Do you want in on this or not? You know, maybe you send that. But I mean, yeah. There's no way to make it, you know, someone give you an offer. There's no way to make someone consider your offer. There's no way to make someone interested in a player they're not interested in. And that's the thing with the marketplace that people miss. You can pull out keep, trade, cut, and all this bullshit. They're just not interested.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. And so I think like. I think there's a couple of things to kind of think about this.
Yeah.
I always try and think in probabilities, right? And think about like, okay, well, what's the, you know, what's kind of my range of outcomes? We've used that term a little bit. You know, what's what do I expect of this player? And then what do I expect of what I'm trading him for? Right. So again, that might seem like rudimentary, but like, okay, if I trade Brian Robinson for like 206 this year, you know, really, am I going to get a starting running back from that job, from that place? Probably not. Right. So while Keep Trade Cut or Fantasy Calc might have him valued at such, I'm just using him as a placeholder example. It's really hard to justify doing that deal. Right. So like that would be a scenario where I'd be like very hesitant to like think I'm selling low. Like, OK, that's just the player I'm going to have to hang on to. Like that's what his role is going to be, a lineup guy for me now. Right. And again, he's not a roster clogger because he's lineup capable. Right. I mean, yeah. he finished 12th in receiving yards last year.
Right. I totally agree with this, by the way. Hey, Jordan, I totally agree with this. Like, but if what if I'm not competing? Right. If I'm not competing, then the 206 traditionally has been like where, you know, players like, well, you know, Devontae, no, he didn't fall that far, but Michael Pittman did or whatever, T. Higgins. And, you know, there's been players. I mean, you just go back 206, right? Jaden Reed, all this. But that's why I even said a 25 second. If you're not competing, you almost rather have the 25 second, you know, a random 25 second better than this year's 2.06 for a rebuilding team, which sounds crazy, but it's true, because then you get to actually have the leverage of that value, right? Because maybe you can package that. You have more time to package that to maybe get a different player at some point. You have almost a year. If you're not winning this year, what the hell do you need to make the pick for this year? You know, if you were on the clock at the 2.06, you'd almost rather be like, can I just do this next year? I don't need players, man. I need time. You know, I need to stack this all. So this is what, you know, maybe you can do that where you can say, oh, instead of getting your 2.06, I know you're trying to win this year. Give me your 25 second, and how about just your 26 second? That way, you know, you're a great team. You're obviously going to dominate now, and these picks are going to be shit. And someone says, sure. Well, now you basically have, you know, you were able to re-roll it twice. Now you got a little bit better shot, right? See what I'm saying? Like, these are the ways that you can sometimes squeeze the deal, and it still benefits both parties, you know? So this is – but. The thing I'm stressing here is you don't always get offers all over the place for a player, even if you want to get off them. It's harder. That's why sometimes, you know, I just saw it was who was it? Oh, it was Izzy Elkafaz was asking to be an orphan on Twitter, and he goes, it needs to be an active league, or I'm not taking the fucking orphan. Whatever, that's what he wants to do. He wants to take an orphan. Who knows why? But not the point. The point was his one thing was it needs to be an active league. And he knows that because if he has a bunch of stuff, he needs to be able to engage with people and sell stuff, even if he's going to sell low. I'm sure he's thinking things are going to be moving. You know, I'm selling Brian Robinson for 2/3 and a, you know, right? He's going to be like, yeah, everything's for sale. And he's just going to, he's going to show you how it's done with a rebuild by pushing everything out and putting it all into the iron bank and moving it forward. You know, the whole thing, the whole idea. So, you know, but without activity, it's hard to just manufacture transactions for yourself. It's almost impossible.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And by the way, if you're thinking about not contending right now, like we're recording this, it's, you know, the last couple of days of February.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about that, just before you commit to not contending in 2024, go to Football Guys. Go onto the website and just sort the running back finishers last year by points per game. Okay. And Christian McCaffrey's one. Okay. Kyren Williams, who was available for nothing, was two. Devon Achane, a second round rookie pick, was three. Raheem Mostert, available outside the top 25 rounds of startup drafts, was four. Alvin Kamara, he was in the late 20s of startup ADP at periods of time last year, was number five. Gibbs was a first-round rookie pick. Travis Etienne, who everyone dumped all over because he couldn't score a touchdown, scored 11 of them last year and finished seventh. Brees Hall, he was way up there. Rashad White, by the way, who people had written off, right,
yep. Is
at nine. Barkley, who was like the other, you know, there was basically three high-priced veterans in that. In
he
that
had a buy tier, window, though.
He had a buy window as well. Like, he was available outside the top eight last year. Pacheco and Montgomery, that rounds out the top 12. Like, there was easy, gettable players in that range that if you say, okay, listen, I don't need to be, like, someone that's not contending right now is not ever going to be able to sort of land a Raheem Mostert because they're not going to kind of aim for that. But if you say, hey, listen, I want to hang around because I don't know what's going to happen. Right? It's February. I don't know what's going to happen at the end of March, let alone at the end of November. And like, let's kind of be open to a huge range of outcomes, right? Like if you had taken CJ Stroud last year, like you would have never thought that you weren't going into that thinking you probably were picking in the top, you know, four or five picks. If you had gotten there naturally, you're probably like, right, my team's not great. If you landed Stroud and you also landed on a guy like Raheem Mostert or one of those other guys we mentioned, if you went Stroud Ashane in a rookie draft, that team is probably a very strong team last year, right? Much stronger than you would have ever expected with that. And I think that it's, you got to keep a wide range of outcomes. If you don't think you're going to contend right now, you know, this should be a time to sort of retool your team for 2024, not kick the can to 2025.
Yeah. And I think if you're going to trade Brian Robinson in that example, by the way, and you're that team, and you don't think you're competitive, trading Brian Robinson for 25 second and then just down to like, I don't know, even like Khalil Herbert or J.K. Dobbins or something, you know what I mean? Where it's like, you know, the Kyren Williams of this year, where it's like, just as, you know, at least I get a shot at another running back, someone that he's happy to get off of. He's like, dude, obviously you can fucking have J.K. Dobbins, whatever, or whatever. Make up your own name. You know what I mean? Miles Sanders or something stupid. You know, again, guys that nobody wants. Every time I just said all those guys, everybody listening went, no, I don't want him. I don't want him. Like, that's what you do. Nobody wants them. Nobody wanted Kyren Williams. If you were like, Kyren Williams, we talked about it, was RB70 before the season. RB70, not player 70, running back 70 going into the season. So, like, go look at whoever the fuck running back 60 through 80 are in your league. That's where Kyren Williams came from. Now, that's not to say that there's another one coming from there. It's just to say, to your point, you don't know exactly where they're coming from. So by sort of trading the uncertainty for future picks and, you know, another back is not crazy when you're trying to rebuild. I mean, you know, as Scott Connor says, any running back on a 53, it has an opportunity. Speaking of which, you know, just talked about one of the other questions was about trading in Dynasty. And certainly we started talking about a lot of the advice that you would give about trading in Dynasty. What are some of your other sort of trade advice, bits that you tend to try to utilize to get deals done?
I think it matters like the time of year. So like right now, I'm spending a ton of time thinking about how I get more top 30 guys.
Right.
And so that's, I think, you know, more so than anything, I'm thinking about that. And so that's like kind of where I think about. I think different positions are different as well. Receiver, I'm much more likely to trade down than a quarterback, where I'm never going to really trade down. Tight end, I think this year is really interesting as well from just the nature of it. Like, I think that there's some arbability, if we can use that word, like you can arbitrage that position pretty interestingly with like a number of guys. So that's kind of the one thing. The other thing, like I would really, really, really caution people on doing, like actually in my AOD, in my Dynasty team building guide, I have a chart that's just trade rules. Like it's actually like all of the things I've learned in Dynasty on one page. It was like, you know, Chad uses the quote, like, it gets very difficult to write a short letter. Like, I'm sorry, I couldn't write a shorter letter. I didn't have enough time. Like the amount of time it takes to put everything I know on one page was like absurd. But I have a trade rule section. And one of the things that I think on there is, and strongly believe is you don't trade up for a wide receiver in a rookie draft, right? The odds are just not in your favor when you do that. And you're spending too much to do it. And the price is too high for all the reasons we talked about with the receiver, the nature of the receiver position earlier. That would be one of the things that I would really, really caution people. So if like you're thinking, oh, Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be my savior, I would very much caution you against doing that. Right. Because the odds are not what you think they are.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, I mean, if you can do so, you know, inexpensively, that's one thing. I've seen some pretty cool deals get done. But yeah, if you're paying Justin Jefferson or even AJ Brown prices for Marvin Harrison, it's a risky bet is all I'll say. You know, it's a risky bet. Doesn't mean it won't happen. His ceiling outcome, of course, is right there. But his floor, I've been saying, like, you know, we looked at range of outcomes for like Marvin Harrison Jr. And like, you know, realistically, right? Like, it's like DeAndre Hopkins ceiling, you know, George Pickens floor. Like, you know, reasonably. Obviously, it could be fucking Jerry Rice or N'Keal Harry or whatever. Yeah, I get it. But I'm just talking like, you know, the type of player he is, outside X, very good, you know, profile, big school. Like, what, you know, where's that sort of, I think the reasonable zone is that. Well, if you did all that for closer to George Pickens, you're going to be really pissed off about it, right? You know, you know what I mean? So, like, that's kind of your point. You're not saying that Marvin Harrison isn't a good prospect because – again, you don't even think like that. It's more that you do realize that there's range of outcomes with this type of stuff all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Can we discuss Marvin Harrison Jr. for a second?
Yeah, do it, man.
So I'm not positive on this. The reading of it was a little bit ambiguous, but the way I understand it is he is not going to the combine. He's physically not going to be in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Which that's the way the report read. I could be wrong on that, but
that's how I read it too. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but I'm with you so far.
That's the way.
Either way, pretty much snubbing the whole thing.
And so it could be snubbing. Like, I worry about like tail outcomes, right? And so like, I look at him and I say, there's one of two things I think are extremely possible. Okay. Number one, that he's been made a promise by a team in the top two, three, maybe four, that they're going to take him there. Now, by the way, Arizona is the massive favorite to take him. Like, the implied odds are like 65% that he's going to go to Arizona. How anyone could be that sure of anything at this point in the calendar is an absolute mystery to me, especially for a team that just traded down last year. So that's a whole other story. But I wonder, on one hand, if he's been made a promise. Now, that isn't super common that we know about in football, but it is in basketball. Right. And you know who owns a basketball team? The Washington Commanders ownership group.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's one thing I kind of look at, and I'm like, is there something that we don't know that Marvin Harrison Jr. knows about that doesn't require him to go run? And I wonder if that is a promise at either two, three, or four.
Right.
So that's the first thing I think about. Okay. And if that is not true, he is leaving himself. He is absolutely leaving himself over to. Can I swear on this podcast? I can swear.
Yeah,
we
love fucking swearing. As a matter of fact, the drinking game, nobody's heard us swear. They're sitting with a shot glass just going, when the fuck are they going to start swearing?
All right. So Marvin Harrison Jr. either knows where his floor is. Like, literally someone's told him, hey, we're going to take you at this spot if you're there. And it's comfortable to him. I would assume that's like the top four or five picks. Or he's totally fucking up this process because he leaves himself open to Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze or someone like that. I think it would be most likely Malik Nabers coming in, running really well, having a good pre-draft process. And by the way, the fact that if he's not actually going to go to Indy, these teams aren't going to have medicals on him. Like, I come back and I look at all this entire situation and I think, okay, if a guy does not want to in 2024, if a person does not want to show off to you, right, in the Instagram, Facebook, Twitter world, you know, the TikTok world, right? If someone does not want to show off to you, what are they hiding? Right.
Right.
And I got in a lot of trouble from some dynasty people saying this earlier on in the offseason. I'll say it again now. If Marvin Harrison Jr. does not want to show his medicals and does not want to run, why is that? Right. And it's either A, he's been promised something, or B, he's potentially making a mistake. And I think it's a really fascinating decision, and we'll probably know. And maybe we ultimately find out the actual truth about what happened. But I am very, very intrigued about how the storyline plays out, because I don't think it's – yeah, he's like a locked-on favorite to go as wide receiver one. Again, I'm a natural skeptic on a lot of these things. I just think the market's right. Much certainty. It's fascinating to me. This is a very fascinating situation.
Yeah, I read it a little bit differently. I felt like, I don't know about a promise, but like, I feel like the league is sort of promising it to him. Like, you're the best ever, you know, you're legendary. generational talent at the wide receiver position. And, you know, if he's available at four or five and someone passed on him for some, you know, someone will trade up. You know, I mean, in other words, he is sort of guaranteed to go in there, I believe. Not guaranteed, but as close to it as it comes, you know, in this day and age. And I think he made a business decision like, I don't need your stinking combine. I'm fucking, you know, so good. Which I found interesting because it's like, well, is he devaluing the combine or is he devaluing himself, right? And you're looking at the other side saying maybe he's devaluing himself. I don't really know. I don't know how much, you know, it's like the league talks out of both sides of their mouth. They're like, you know, they don't need the combine. It's not that important. But yet every team shows up with stopwatches and pencils and, you know, puts the, you know, wants to meet all these players, wants to put them through the drills. It seems both important and unimportant at the same time. We can talk about the importance of it. You know, certainly, you know, the run fast is interesting because when these guys run fast, what the one thing I'll say about 40 time is it's actually a bad metric for wide receivers. And the reason it's a bad metric for wide receivers is because when a guy runs fast, a fast 40 at the combine, they tend to also get overdrafted. And so their draft capital counts twice because you count the 40 time as being important, which it really isn't at the wide receiver position. And they get higher draft capital, which makes them a higher value prospect in almost every single model. So that's why it's a sort of a negative. I'd rather take the guy who runs slower at draft capital cost because they overcount it. Because it does matter more to the league than it does to production. Having, you know, a guy like MVS or Jalin Hyatt or these guys that run wind sprints that spread, you know, spread the field or stretch the field vertically matters in the actual NFL. Even if they don't get targeted, they put pressure on safeties, opening up things underneath for better players. But it doesn't really matter to your fantasy team. So very, very interesting. But all that being said, I think it's more that he thinks that he's going to go, you know, wherever he's going to go, regardless of what he does. And I argued that he can only hurt himself by going. Because if he goes and it's like, oh, shit, he ran a 4.61. Wait a second. Are we sure? And then neighbors run to 4.38. It's like, again, I don't think that matters in real life. But all of a sudden, the narrative changes and you have a whole month and a half to talk about how, well, maybe Marvin Harrison is. And then all of a sudden teams get that sort of that Caleb Williams pressure, you know, to take neighbors instead of Harrison, and Odunze looked great. Maybe Odunze's better. I've heard this from this, you know, then it can actually hurt him and cost him money. What if he runs a 4.71 and goes full Laquon Treadwell? Not saying that I think that would happen, but why isn't he doing it? Well, there you go. Now it's only for us to speculate.
Absolutely. And it's just, it's, I don't know, you leave open that question, right? And it's just, I think that like, people are going to, their team's spending a lot of money, and especially without the medicals. Like, I don't know. I just, you look at guys like last year, like even last year, Sean Tucker had a heart issue that wasn't picked up. It's my understanding. It wasn't picked up until he tested pre-draft because it was never an issue at Syracuse.
Right.
And that caused him to fall from probably some sort of day two, early day three prospect to out of the draft. Right. And I look at that and I'm like, you know, there's these teams worry about things like this is kind of my, that's kind of my operating prism. Yeah. Like, I think they probably over worry about stuff. It's going to be fascinating. I just think it's going to be fascinating.
So given your propensity to look at value more than players, one of the things I know that you're not doing is you're not falling in love with the 1.05 right now because you you know, attach that to, oh, no, I can't trade the 105 because it's Malik Nabers or whatever. You're not doing that. So I wonder then, what are you doing with your first-round picks right now? Like, are you willing to trade them? Are you trading them? Or what are your thoughts in that regard right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always open to trading picks is my sort of initial thought. I'm always open to trying to, you know, explore, you know, making a deal for the picks. I'm looking for elite players usually when I do that at this time of year. Right? I'm shopping for, I'm using those picks in players for top 30 players, right? Usually at a premium position. So if I can get an upgraded quarterback or tight end, that's the deal. The other thing that I would generally say is, like, if I'm sort of in the middle of the round, like, I really want to be at the back of a tier. Like, I want to, the same conversation that, like, we talked about with Chicago earlier, where it's like, yes, I want to, like, force other people to sort of make the, like, I want to force other people to pay for the decision. Like, yep. I really, really want to do that. And so that's the, that's kind of the angle for me that I'm constantly thinking about is, like, okay, well, how do I, you know, how do I go, instead of picking wide receiver one, like, how do I pick if there's four or five guys that are, you know, I like profile wise, relatively similarly in terms of draft costs and like breakout age and that sort of stuff. How do I kind of get the fourth or fifth one instead of, you know, sitting at one or two? Usually that's a trade down, right? I like to run some two-way goes where I can get, you know, a little of, you know, both, right? Where I can get, you know, maybe I get an existing player plus a pick or something like that in a trade down. I really like to do that sort of stuff. I'm very active with my picks. And again, it's not really falling in love with players. The less I fall in love with players, I think the better I am as a dynasty GM. I'll just say that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't hate that. I certainly have a bit of player love because of how we go about it. You know, I do scout heavily. So I actually have to resist falling in love with players. We talk about this all the time. And, you know, in our sort of process, we talked about it last week, myself, Chalk and Wiz, which is basically the tripod of our draft analysis. You know, Wiz is sort of our data guy. You know, Chalk is ultimate strategy, and I'm sort of, you know, I do a bit of film, and I take in some of the other film too. And then we'll do things like, you know, we just take everything. Like, I'm going to have Matt Harmon on the show later in the off season here, which I'm super excited about. A number of great guests coming up, but we'll look at reception perception and what does it tell us? You know, what does it tell us about this prospect? And we're going to use that to help us formulate our score. So as we start to go through player evaluation, we start to think about, you know, okay, here's what we think. Well, now here's what someone who fucking really does this wide receiver thing thinks a little bit differently. Well, how does that jive with what we've done for research? You know, we're not stuck on our, well, I would disagree with them. You know, it's like, no, we're just going to use that information to add to our player evaluation and player analysis. That being said, we talked about it last week about basically moving back from the 101 or 102 into the 105, 106, 104, because there's a little bit of a flat curve in there in terms of tier. And so what you're talking about is very true. You got to be careful, because if you don't know where the tiers are, you can mess that up. You know, from my perspective, if you trade from the 105 to the 108 or 109, you might have lost a lot of value in this draft, but thinking, oh, no, I only traded back four spots, you know, so that's can be a big difference in my personal and humble opinion. Now, maybe that ends up being incorrect because, you know, there's still more to come, but you get my point. As it stands right now, that valued gap is pretty different. The 109 to the 106 is a pretty big value difference, much, much bigger than the 105 to even the 101. So long story short, I totally agree with you, but identifying those tiers is huge. What type, again, top 30 players, what veteran players are you trying to trade for, or maybe even the other way is more exciting. What veteran players are you trying to trade to get picks? And because sometimes it's hard to do, because picks are sort of hard to trade for, aren't they?
Yeah, they're really usually hard to trade for is the thing that I find. I don't do a ton of trading up for like rookies. Right. I do think like trying to find, like, I thought last year was a really interesting case, because you could just say, you know, the difference, like last year, there was a pretty big like line of demarcation in the draft, at least in my opinion, at five, because you went from three top four picks in the NFL draft at quarterback and two first round running backs to a tier of wide receivers, tight ends and you know, other players. And I thought that like that was a key line to trade from, you know, seven to five, like to really pay that price, because
right.
And not even necessarily because I thought, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs or you know, Bryce Young or Stroud or whoever was there was going to be like the savior to my team, just because I thought that player was going to be an asset to me going forward in a way that the player at six, I wasn't as convinced that that was going to be true.
Right.
Or seven or eight, wherever. Right. So, yeah. So I'm thinking a lot about that. You know, I don't, I, one of the mistakes that I've made is determining my takes on rookie drafts in like March. And because the ultimate predictor of performance in the NFL, like the most important single thing that we can know about a player, if I only know two things about a player, it's their position and where they went in the NFL draft, like where they, the number of the selection,
that tells you
a substantial amount, right?
Yeah, draft
and so that tells you more than really any sort of pre-draft model that you can take. And so I come back to that a lot and about thinking about, okay, well, how do I kind of work these tiers? So that way I can, you know, I'm using those, that information that's given to me, that's been very predictive. And I'm using that, to better off my, to make my team better. Like that's something I think a lot about.
Yeah. Yeah. We basically do the same. We do have a pretty cool model that we've kind of built. It's almost done basically there. I mean, you know, we've done some modeling, but now with, we've got a few team members with Coder and Wiz that are really helping us like put some meat behind this thing. But we always do pre-draft, post-draft anyway, right? Which is basically just like, you know, what are our thoughts pre-draft and then post-draft. And I talked to Scott Barrett last year, going to have Scott on again this year. He's unbelievable. But Scott was like, you know, he had like Marvin Mims way up. I think he was wide receiver 2 in his pre-draft, and like I had him a little further down, but I loved Marvin Mims. And it was like, and when we were talking, do you factor in projected draft capital? He says, no. And I was like, well, that's probably the better way to do it. Right. Like it's funny because if you're gonna have a pre-draft model, why try and factor in what you think the draft capital will be? Just have it without it. So I've gone back and forth with what I think about that because the draft capital is going to be what it is. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like, why yes. project it, you know?
Right. Yeah, I totally agree with that. But you have to – so that's, like, the part of kind of understanding it that I think is important, right? Because, you know, I'll use the example. And one of the reasons I started writing about Dynasty Fantasy Football is because Kiaris Garrett, like, this would have been, what, 16? I think it was 2016, somewhere in there. Kiaris Garrett was being pushed pre-draft with all these, you know, with a lot of the newer metrics that we use now. He was like one of the beginning guys in a lot of that market share and a lot of that stuff. And he looked great on paper. And so I was like, okay, this is a guy I want to target in rookie drafts. And then he went undrafted.
Right.
And if you don't know who Kiaris Garrett is, I don't fault you because Kiaris Garrett never recorded an NFL statistic. he was out of Tulsa. He was actually a big guy. I believe it was out of Tulsa. But I spent 206 on a rookie draft in him because I thought like, well, this is a guy I really wanted. And then, you know, and the you big dummy, like you forgot like how important the NFL draft is. I didn't appreciate it at that point. And I've come to appreciate it a lot more now. And so like, I think keeping the guardrails, like draft pedigree keeps the guardrails on you from like driving your car off of a cliff. Yeah. Right. And I think you really have to regress your takes towards that draft pedigree is, I think, like the big thing that I've learned.
Yeah. And I found recently, by the way, that, and I think you'll probably, this will, I don't know if you've thought about this or looked into this, but the running backs are more volatile from projected draft capital to actual draft capital than wide receivers. You know, we are better at projecting where wide receivers will be drafted. Like, when I say we, I mean like, you know, mock draft database or something, you know, just in general, we. Not me. You know, the world is better at projecting, you know, quarterbacks and wide receivers than we are running backs. I don't know if you found that.
Yeah, and I mean the sample on these guys, and this year it's crazy because like you go to grinding the mocks, there's no top 60 projections at running back, right?
None.
Like that's wild, right? That's pretty wild. So I do think it's a really interesting time to kind of like, again, this is like a time of year that I think a lot about draft props because like that really interests me. And I think that's a place where, you know, using all that information and kind of that knowledge can really be valuable. And then once the pick is selected, I'm very much able to kind of put together a board. And I basically spend all of April, you know, just studying the rookies and I kind of catch up later on in the draft, draft process.
Yeah. And if you're not in leagues where you draft before the draft, I think that's actually wise. Actually, you know, we were doing a lot of, you know, prospect stuff over the last few weeks for sure. You know, ultimately, I, depending on why people consume your content, right? Like, obviously, people aren't consuming your content for your player takes on incoming rookies. You know what I mean? That's not what they're doing.
That would be a mistake.
Right. So they're not doing that. So you don't have any pressure to do that as a content creator.
And I'm very transparent about it. And I'm very transparent about it by the reason why I do it. Right. Because, and again, it's one of the things like I've spent, it's funny for me cycle wise, like I've spent the last like 2 or 3 years really trading future picks for elite players.
Right.
And now I have those elite players and I'm in a very interesting spot. And I haven't exactly come up with like the solution to it this year. But it's like, okay, now that I have all these, like, I'm awesome at quarterback generally across my, you know, not on every team, but I have a fair share of like star quarterbacks. Now I kind of like have replenished those picks and I'm like, okay, now kind of what's the next, you know, what's my next move, right? Kind of like what's the next efficiency to thing? And is it to stick and pick in rookie drafts? Like, I tend to think that's probably not it because, again, I for a lot of the reasons I just said, I don't think I can beat the market. But I think it's a, so I think it's a really interesting, like strategic point that I'm kind of in.
Let's talk about that. But I was just going to say, from a content creation standpoint, you don't need to, right? We sort of do from a content creation standpoint, what we are at the Undroppables, the whole thing. Right. And so we've been doing it, but like recently I had Chalk on, I was like, however, our dynasty process does not need us to be so informed right now. You know what I mean?
Right.
Just like if I'm just in a league, I don't really give a shit. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I only need someone else to be able to tell me. Like tell me all about these fucking prospects, bro. And then, you know, late I can catch up. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Unless I have a draft coming up, I don't need to know yet. And so I do agree with that as a fantasy player, as a dynasty player. Content creation is different. And, you know, it doesn't hurt you to know the prospects early, but it can if you really just have these hard, you know, takes that don't move and you're not fluid and if you're not water like Bruce Lee, you're in trouble because you're going to make some big mistakes. And really, that's the reason that you want to know everything so well to begin with is so that you don't really avoiding landmines is as important as drafting the good players. Like, because if you had somehow been able to, and we're looking at players like Jalen Reagor, and what did we miss as a community, as a content creator, as a dynasty player? I didn't draft a ton of Jalen Reagor, but that doesn't mean I wasn't in on him. You know what I mean? And so it's like, okay, well, what was that mistake? What was it? Okay, well, let's learn about that, right? And so forth and so on. But like, if we could have missed that, then you would have had Justin Jefferson or whoever knows, right? Like you would have had some other player that would have been better than him by simply avoiding him. But getting back to what you said about like, do I stick and pick and like, how do I sort of go from here? You know, there's a lot of thought that I have about this. And in some of the leagues where I've really dominated, I've taken, you know, situations where I've like moved picks where I've, you know, into, you know, like right now, 2024, where let's say you have like, the 103, the 107, the 201, and the, you know, 202 or something, right? You have all these picks. And sometimes it's like, wow, what if I trade the, you know, the whatever I just said, 103 and the 107 to somebody for they're like 208 and like they have like they have 225 first. I get those plus their 26 first or something. You know, whatever. And like I just sort of push it all forward, right? It's an easy way to like miss on the landmines, right? Because if you don't pick them, you don't hit the landmines. If your team is really good, like if you're just going to dominate, and then you still have, but now you have your own pick plus, like now you have like 4 or 5 first round picks in the next, you know. And sometimes if you can sort of stack a draft, then you can kind of dominate because then you sort of control the draft by moving down and getting more and more value in the future. Sometimes you can just stack your team. And that's how I've done it, you know, where it's like, why stick and pick? You know, basically you want to make them pay, right? Like move your pick from wherever, you know, into next year's draft, but get something like, so, you know, especially, you know, I've done this last year on a number of occasions when I had the Dalton Kincaid pick. Whenever I had Dalton Kincaid's pick, which could have been the A-chain pick, you know, it was late first, basically. But a lot of people were hot to trot on the tight end one, and I was there. and I would just take the Kincaid pick and I would trade it. And I would trade it for their future first, right? This year's first. And of course, that's random, but I'm trading a late first for a random 25 first plus. And I would get like the 3.02 or the 2.10 or whatever. I'd move the hell out of there. I'd get a pick in that draft. So I'd still have a player. That player could be Jaden Reed or Laporta or Mims or whomever, right? Jalen Hyatt, if you want to make it a bad player. So I didn't draft very much of that, but it could be, right? But I have that player, plus I have the 25 first. That's your classic two-way go, right? But it's only with draft picks. You know, it's basically, I'm going to sell my pick this year for its equivalent value plus a late pick. So I still get a player. I could have gotten Puka or Tank Dell or who knows what, right? I still get a player, plus I get way more draft capital going forward. And so it continues on and on. Next year I have three first instead of two this year. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I actually think in one place that I'm studying is kind of that idea, but for a bit of a different purpose. And so like one of the things that I look back at the Puka Nacua experience, and I also look back at the Kyren Williams experience, and I think like, well, what can I learn from that?
Yeah.
It's never going to be, the lesson from that should never be that I'll be able to pick that next guy. Correct. Because if you look at if you want to just sort of look at the day three wide receivers from last year, the median points per game for those guys was less than 2.5. Okay. I think it was 2.2. So the answer to that is you're never going to be able to pick the next guy. Don't think you can. Right. I don't think that that's what the answer is. It's very rarely been the case where the market has identified the breakout day three guy. It was basically only like Mike Williams from Syracuse because where he landed and some of the reasons why he fell, right? That's basically been the only time that that's the market's really gotten that decision right. So, but instead of trying to predict that player, the thing that I'm trying to figure out is there a place where you can buy high on that player? So is there a way to kind of figure out, hey, the first couple of weeks, this is vastly different than what we thought. And it's vastly and there will be a market there, right? Because what will happen is someone will pick Puka Nacua or next, you know, someone took Puka Nacua at, you know, 407. Yep. And they're like, I can get a second for him. He's done.
Bingo.
Well, maybe that second, again, this isn't always the case. And I'm not correct. Saying that in any time someone starts well that you trade a future second for him. That's not what I'm saying. Okay. That's absolutely not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that there are situations that will present themselves that should change the way we think about that. Now, you get the Travis Fulgham situations and those types of things where those happen and you think, no, that's not one of these. But you looked at what Nacua did through a couple of weeks. It was vastly different than what we expected in terms of route participation and his target rate and the target share and all those metrics really checked out. And you're like, wait a second, this is something vastly different than what we thought. Well, why is that, right? Same with Kyren Williams, right? Kyren Williams, there was a situation to buy high. And actually, my biggest regret from last year is not buying on him when he got hurt, right? That's the biggest regret that I made last year, right? I look back on that and I think that's a terrible mistake. So I think one of the next things is to kind of not try and predict these things, but to try and have the future flexibility, not because I want to make a ton of picks, but because I want to be able to be active in the trade market to pounce on these situations when they present themselves, right? Yeah. So I want to be able to be in on a quote buy high of Puka Nacua at a mid second round rookie pick valuation when I think there's a chance he could go to be, you know, a top 20 startup pick, right? I want to sort of be able to identify those situations. And I think that's a place because people will always be nervous about, oh, well, I could get a second now. I don't want to lose that opportunity. I'll trade that. That market will always be there. Because people are have that loss aversion on that market gain. And I think like if you can identify those situations where you're not buying high, you're buying on the upswing, right? I think there's a difference there. I think you got to kind of, you know, understand and appreciate those things. And I think that's one thing I'm really going to kind of think about more and more.
That's right. I totally agree. I think we're trying to do both over here at the Undroppables, to be honest with you. I mean, if I could be so bold, you know, but I think what you're saying is something that anybody can do, even when you're wrong. And that's the beauty. Like I give the example of, you know, it's so funny because like last year, you know, it was JSN, Addison, Quentin Johnson, Zay Flowers, right? That was kind of the top four. And, you know, I had Quentin Johnston, I think, over Zay Flowers during the prospect time. And I wasn't too happy about that. So I basically was like, I don't really like this. You know, I didn't like Zay Flowers for a couple of reasons. You know, I didn't like Quentin Johnston for a couple of reasons. So it's not like I was like Quentin Johnston over Zay Flowers. I just had to make the choice in a ranking, right? You can't have them even. You have to fucking pick one over the other. But my general take was I would rather move up for Addison from, you know, that pick or sell it out, you know, get the hell out of there, right? That was how I played it for the most part. So even though you have a ranking, doesn't mean, you know, so anyway, long story short, you get Quentin Johnston. I had him on, I think, one team. And as soon as I thought this ain't the guy, I was selling for as much as I could, even if it was quote unquote low. I was just trying to get out. Same thing with Puka. You know, yes, I might have missed on him in a league or two or three or four or 10, who knows. But mm-hmm. as soon as I was like, wait, the news out of camp is that this kid's getting everything and he's doing great. And then you say, hey man, there were some underlying, you know, yards per route run and targets per route run where he was elite in college. And now they're saying they love him and that, you know, and then week one happens and you're like, okay, yeah, this is what I thought. This is possible and definitely worth a second. And so it's like baking in, even though of course during the draft, of course I wasn't going to take Puka over Quentin Johnston because that didn't make any sense at that time. But because I was prepared for both outcomes to kind of go wonky, I basically have zero shares, zero cares of Quentin Johnston. I'm almost at 50% Puka Nacua. And it's exactly for the reasons that you stated. It's like, as soon as you see it not be the thing that you thought it was, you got to get the fuck out of there or get in. Like, you know, you got to move fast and take advantage of the inadequacies that are in the market based off the players that they're becoming. Because we stick to our priors way too much as a community. And that's a mistake almost every time.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. And I think you got to like appreciate where the new normal is, right? Where the new, you know, where the new right reality of these players is, because it moves and you have to identify where that's true and when that's not true. Yes. Right. And that's the key, is to kind of, you got to avoid being the sucker on a buy high, which yeah. there are opportunities and there are absolutely yeah. opportunities where you're not buying high, you're buying on the upswing. And I think that right. that's kind of walking that line. Like, I think that'll be a place where I kind of look at more and more.
You know what though? Yeah. You know what though, Jordan? Why not? I mean, look, maybe you get a Fulgham here and there. But here's the thing. Fulgham wasn't the prospect that Puka was either. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not, you know, saying that, you know, I remember selling Fulgham on the upswing. I mean, you know, I didn't have too much of him, but, you know, I'd pick him up and, you know, sold him a couple times. It was fine. You know, whatever I got, it was fine. I didn't see Fulgham as a Puka. You know, it did feel a little bit, it felt a lot different than that. You know, first of all, he wasn't a rookie when he did it. There's a lot of differences. So, you know, when people hold up the Fulgham candle to Puka, I was always like, well, why would you do that? Those aren't the same fucking things. That's not the same thing at all. That was an injury fucking reason this guy got into a game. Like, this is not the same thing. That's a Kenbrell Tompkins or something. You know what I mean? It's a totally different answer. It's just not the same thing. You know, this was an Anquan Boldin situation, you know, more than it was a, you know, so looking at these things and having an understanding of what's really happening, but fuck it, go for it. If you think you're getting something, you know, that's why you have capital to begin with. And these second and third round picks, if you can turn them into a Puka Tank Dell type player post draft, when you see that the story's changing, go for it. You know, that's what you've got those damn picks there for in the first place. You know, God, the trade that would probably be the one that would just, you know, would have been the chef's kiss, would have been the Quentin Johnston for Puka Nacua plus, you know, right. after week one or something. If someone has that receipt, that's the one where you just, you know, mwah.
Quentin Johnston for Puka Nacua in a first.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Don't do that. But even a second. Oh my God, dude. Someone holds that receipt, right? Someone does.
Right. So it's there someplace. Yeah.
Someone holds that fucking beautiful receipt. Yeah. Oh my God. That would be so, so blessed. So give me a player, like, let the people, we're going to go out here. By the way, thank you for coming on, man. You're fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. I love our conversations. Maybe we can find an argument and we can make this contentious. I like it when we do that, me and you. We love each other though. That's the problem now. We're too soft with each other. But let's
yeah, we let love each say, other. We've gotten soft in our old age.
Man. I know. That's what it is. I know. We used to you know
fucking bond over there. Back spasms and
yes and, we yeah. have yes we have. I don't know if that's making the show, but I had the fire truck called on me because I had back spasms, which is not fun. All right, so let's talk about like a player that you think going into 2024 is of value. You know, maybe, you know, looking at best ball, looking at sort of redraft, just in general, where the market is versus where they're at right now. And, who you got?
So there's one guy I'm fascinated by, and I think we'll talk about a second guy too, Jalen Waddle, right? When you yeah. look at his stats this yeah. year, 2.63 yards per route run, that was actually, you know, the best number of his career. Again, he got hurt. And I think Tyreek Hill overshadows him. But Tyreek Hill's 30, and again, I'm not predicting demise, but like there is an age curve, right? And yeah. I think Waddle is continued to track up. And you look at all the other sustainable metrics like targets per open route run, which is like my favorite thing to look at for wide receivers. Like he's elite in the category. So you look at that and you're like, okay, that's really a good opportunity again with good pedigree. Like he's behind guys like Garrett Wilson. Like I have no idea like what the disparity is between those two players in cost. It doesn't make much sense to me because Waddle's been better basically at every point of their career. So that's kind of my first one that I'm looking at him as a tier. And again, I don't trade up for a ton of wide receivers, but if I'm like looking to try and add at wide receiver and to try and get like what I could consider like a wide receiver one type player at not that price, like he's the starting point. The other one's Nico Collins. And you mentioned something before this. Nico Collins, by the way, 3.1 yards per route run last year. That's elite stuff. I joked in season that if CJ Stroud was going to basically become like an elite quarterback, that like Tank Dell and Nico Collins could become like, you know, elite players. And I was like saying it tongue in cheek, right. But like that there was like a Mossian quality to like the Nico Collins, like kind of takeoff, yeah. like when CJ Stroud, like it was a joke, but like, I do think it's true. And it's interesting because you pointed out to me, like one of the actual reverse splits here, which is he's got a higher best ball ADP than he has a dynasty ADP. And that's usually yeah. a really good indicator of a player that's undervalued in dynasty, especially that's one right. that's got a record of production. And he is being held down for, and I'd be curious to see if you had Tank Dell's ADP, but he is being held down by, I think, two things. Tank Dell, and I think the other thing is that they could be a player in free agency. I don't know, like, or trade, I guess. Like, outside of Brandon Ayuk, like, I'm not sure that there's a receiver that's going to come in there and going to be better than Nico Collins that's actually available. Right. Yeah. Again, crazy things have happened, but like the guys that are like reasonably available, like there's no one like Michael Pittman Jr. doesn't scare me. T. Higgins Jr. doesn't scare me. T. Higgins doesn't scare me. Like those guys don't scare me. Like if I'm Nico Collins, like I'm the best receiver.
Specifically. Yeah.
Pittman Jr. and T. Higgins. Yeah. See, this is what happens when you start crossing, you know, you've been around too long.
Let me jump in real quick. I don't think T. Higgins or Michael Pittman are going anywhere, but I think Mike Evans would be a problem, but I don't think they're going to do that. Why would they do that? That also doesn't really make much sense. You know, they've got Nico, they've got Tank Dell. They proved that Noah Brown is like a legit weapon when you have a quarterback like CJ Stroud. So they can start to add weapons at cost. I think they really need to fix other things like their offensive line, not fix. I mean, their offensive line wasn't, they need the offensive line. They want to protect CJ Stroud. Even if it's a strength, they should be building on a strength. And then their defense, like they've proven they don't need, you know, weapons to score. Although I would imagine they'll try to add weapons. I still think it'd be fun as hell if they added Saquon. I don't think it's the right move necessarily, but I think it would be fun as hell. So praying for Saquon. But in terms of like the Nico Collins, yeah, he's wide receiver 9 in best ball right now at underdog. And then he's the, I'm just looking real quick here. He's the wide receiver 16 in Dynasty on Keep Trade Cut. Tank Dell, wide receiver 19 in Dynasty. He's the wide receiver, Tank Dell, hold on, 18 in Underdog. So, yeah, you're right. The sort of the idea that Nico is a top 10, and wide receiver 9 in best ball. Boy, if he's only 24, well, he's going to be about 25 here this year, but still a 25-year-old wide receiver. He's younger than Devontae Smith, you know, this type of player. I mean, if he's that good this year, why wouldn't he be that much more valuable in Dynasty? It was funny. I just tried to make a trade. What do you think of this? I tried to trade Nico for Tank Dell, and I asked for like the 210, you know, just to, because he's valued higher, right? He's higher in best ball. He's higher in Dynasty. So I said, hey, give me Tank Dell in the 210. And that particular manager said, I have Tank Dell over Nico in Dynasty. And I was like, fair enough. Like, you know, that's fair. But so it's not like even despite this sort of situation, there's definitely going to be some people who feel like there's some scary stuff with Nico. So I'm kind of with you. I think he may be a value, a buy. I'm not sure. You know, can you, like, here's the one that I think, you know, you guys talked about on your show, by the way, great show with you and Chad Parsons. Was the T. Higgins thing. It's like, can you go from T. Higgins to Nico? I did this last year, by the way. I went from I sold a T. Higgins and my late 24 first, which is like the 114 in that 14 team league, for so T. Higgins and a first for A-Chain and Collins. Nico, yeah. It's a huge win, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Let me quiz you for a second here.
All right.
Who are the top three wide receivers in yards per route run against man coverage last year? According to
in the PFF. NFL.
In the regular season. PFF. Yeah. Yeah.
Tyreek Hill.
He's number three.
Yep. Hold on now. Tyreek Hill. Obviously, it's going to be Nico, right?
Nico Collins is two.
Okay.
I had a Tyreek Hill.
against man. Yards per route run. It's not Ayuk.
It's your boy.
It's CD. Yeah. CD. Yeah.
CD Lamb. Yeah. So I guess my question is like in a world where that's the case.
Yeah.
What are you afraid of? Right. Like, what are you afraid of? I don't know. He's proven everything that you can ask someone to prove to me. You know, and I think the two things that are holding him back is maybe the fear of some of the unknown. And I think the other thing, too, that you got to be careful on. I did a study a couple of years ago, and I think it's relatively held true, which is that about 50% of ADP is predicted by the prior year's total fantasy points scored. Okay. Someone's total PPR points. And that should instantly trigger to you that if a player loses games because he was injured, that there's a value opportunity. Like, that should instantly be the first thing going off. And I think that that's the case. Like, Nico Collins two games last year. It does suppress his numbers just enough. And it makes him look like he blends in a little bit more than he actually does. And I come back to that. And I'm like, that's an elite looking profile. That's my take on Nico Collins.
Yeah, I think what scares people off of Nico and what scares me off a little bit is he had more of a sort of a Gabe Davis profile before last year. You know what I'm saying? Like, yard, and again, that makes sense because but we were ready for Nico because Nico was a five-star prospect going into college, and he never got more than 750 yards receiving in any season. Like, You know what I'm saying? He wasn't prolific there. And then he comes to the NFL and can't get over 500 yards. And then last year, 1,300 yards in 15 games. So, yeah, it's like, wait, is this an aberration? Is this a mirage? Or is this kid for real? And, you know, we looked at a lot of underlying things with Nico saying, hey, we were kind of ready for this with Nico last year. Because it's like he literally hasn't seen a good quarterback ever, like until this past year. Like, you know, I don't know who he played with in high school. Maybe he had a good quarterback in high school, but he did not have elite quarterback play ever in the NFL or in college. So he literally was just, you know, making do with really, really bad situations. And so once he got a good situation, he blows up. I'd say that's more of a signal than, you know, all the time he spent with terrible quarterback play. So I'm with you. Nico Collins is the real deal. And I think that's the way to get him is like a T. Higgins, and maybe you can get Nico plus, just because people are still afraid of Nico. And but even if you can go straight across, would you you'd rather have Nico than T. Higgins if you could make that straight across? Yeah.
Oh my God.
See what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah,
me too.
And by the way, I have a metric called targets per open route run, and basically it strips out any contested targets you get. So like if you have a contested target, you subtract that from both the targets and the routes. And so what you have left is the amount of targets that you have divided by the routes you weren't thrown a contested target on. Okay.
Okay.
And that is extremely, extremely correlated year over year. And it's less noisy because that contested catch stuff is a highly fluky stat year to year. And so what you can do is kind of look at that and get an idea of kind of how players are producing, and you know, it predicts points per route run in an extremely good way. The players above Nico Collins last year, Tyreek Hill, massively above him. CeeDee Lamb, Davante Adams, Jalen Waddle, Keenan Allen, Rashee Rice, by the way, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Nico Collins, Puka Nacua. I mean, if we're scared, right? I don't know what to tell you because once you prove to me, the thing that I've learned in Dynasty is once you prove that you're elite, right? Once somebody proves they're elite, believe them, right? And I think that we get too concerned about, well, this and that and this and that. Like, it's really, really hard to be elite, and the people that do it tend to be it, right? And that's kind of my take on that.
Let's go with Nico Collins. I'm in. I'm ready to go. Still only saw 109 targets. Are we worried? I mean, come on, let's go, baby.
Well, no, and here's the other thing. If you actually look at his stats last year, there was an astonishing number of games where he was like between 85 and 70% route participation. And that was actually – it wasn't a him thing. It was not a him thing. It was a Tank Dell thing. It was a Robert Woods thing. It was a Noah Brown thing, right? They had this like three or four guys that none of them were ever healthy at the same time, by the way.
Right.
But like they would kind of rotate in and out, and they kind of used this rotation. And so kind of my take on Nico Collins is like if he ever like – I think last year can really be like a floor outcome for him because even if he, even if he takes a step back, you would expect some of that route participation to kind of take away, you know, to balance him out a little bit. But if that is what he is and he starts running 90% of routes, like you've got this year's CeeDee Lamb 30-1 to lead the league in receptions, right? Like you've got that capability in his bag. So that's my Nico Collins take.
Let's do it. I'm into it. Well, let's call it, baby. We'll finish with we gave out Tajay Spears last week, Nico Collins this week. I think that's good. We'll keep this going, and I appreciate you, man. It was a lot of fun. Thanks for coming on. I think we had a fun Dynasty Game Theory conversation, which I think the people love. Definitely breaks up some of the just prospect droning on and on. We're going to have plenty of that going forward. It's true, man. I get bored of it sometimes, you know, just talking so much about it. Need to step away. We stepped away today and had a great conversation. Thanks for coming on. Tell the people what you've been up to. I listened to your pod recently with you and Chad. It's really good. Tell the people where they can find that and everything else you're doing.
Yeah, you can find all my work over at analyticsofdynasty.com. The Dynasty Team Building Guide, which I mentioned, is over there. That's evergreen content for you. Give you your, you know, way too much Dynasty strategy in one book. So you can find that over there. I have daily podcasts as well that you can subscribe to over there. You can find the Dynasty Think Tank podcast with me and Chad, wherever you get your podcasts at Dynasty Think Tank, and then follow along on Twitter where invariably I'll make some enemies at some point along the way this off season in a hopefully funny and, predictable way. And so you can find me there at McNamara Dynasty.
Yeah, definitely follow Jordan. He's awesome. He has a great dynasty mind. And like I said, you can sort of hear it in the way that we talk when we talk to each other. He's got a different way of looking at things, and I absolutely love it. I'm so grateful for our friendship. Thank you so much, Mr. Jordan McNamara. And on behalf of everybody here at the Undroppables, on behalf of everybody here at the Undrafted, on behalf of the greatest podcast producer that has ever walked the land, Mr. Michael P. Duncan. you have been joined by the great Jordan McNamara. I am Jax Falcone, and we are out.